What political philosopher or thinker do you most identify with and why?
Christ, because he changed my heart.
I thought that Jesus' being here was about his death and dying on the cross, when it really was about him coming to show us how to do it, to show us the Christ consciousness that he had, and that consciousness abides with all of us.
And that will necessarily involve continuing good relations with the Tibetan people and their remarkable representative, the Dalai Lama.
Hello, Dalai Lama. This is Louis Dalai.
The walls between Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
It is so common now that people do not even notice anymore. Sometimes we don't even realize that we're dealing with this. Divorce is a commonplace occurrence, especially in the United States. Everybody knows the shocking statistics, and no one's really that shocked by them at all. But the real statistics behind the statistics, the real fault and no-fault divorce, the things that fall apart and break apart under a policy of no-fault divorce, which we've had for some time in our country, are shocking. We're going to talk a little bit about them here in the first half of Issues Etc. second hour. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Thursday, the 31st of July. You can join us with questions or comments on no-fault divorce. 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-MY-IE, or email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. In the second half of this hour, Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University and author of several books, including The New Concise History of the Crusades, will correct some of the misinformation that is so common out there about this period in Christian and Islamic history, the Crusades. 1-877-623-MY-IE, talkback@issuesetc.org. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest. She's founder and president of the Ruth Institute based in San Diego. She spent 15 years teaching economics at Yale University and George Washington University, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
The claim is often made, or at least the assumption is made, that no-fault divorce was a step forward for individual liberty in the United States. Has this proven to be true?
Well, you know, in the short term, it looks like it's true because you get to do what you want, or at least one party to the divorce gets to do what they want. But in the long run, it turns out not to be the case, because in most divorces, there is one reluctant party. That is, there's one person who doesn't want the divorce. And so the agents of the state have to step in and separate that person from the marriage, and particularly from the assets of the marriage, which usually mean the family home and the children. And so it turns out that the state gets involved then in all of the minutia of family life as they try to regulate custody and property disputes and all of the other things that come about when two people are not working together in this very private and personal area of their life. The state steps in to regulate those disputes and to deal with those disputes. And so a divorced family can have agents of the state literally looking over their shoulder and have every aspect of their life come under the scrutiny of the family courts, which is not my idea of personal liberty. I don't know about you, Todd, but I don't think of that as personal liberty.
But let's set it in its context then, legally, or at least in terms of marriage as an institution and divorce as an institution, because they're both institutions.
That's right.
Before no-fault divorce, without a comprehensive kind of legal blueprint, what was the mindset toward marriage and its counterpart divorce before we had no-fault divorce?
Well, first of all, the presumption was that once you got married, you were going to stay married. You might not be happy in your marriage, but you would stay married. And that was the default presumption on everybody's mind and in the law's mind. Now, you could get divorced, but you could get divorced for cause, and that was really the difference, you know, and that's what it means to say there's no-fault divorce versus some kind of fault-based system. Under a fault-based system, there's some kinds of things that are legitimate grounds for divorce, and there's a defaulting party and an innocent party, and the law would in some ways take account of the fact that one party had kept their vows and the other party had not kept their vows. And so it was in a sense more like a contract, where people default on contracts all the time, but the law at least takes some recognition of of the fact that one party did what they said they would do and the other party didn't, and has some arrangements for paying some kind of damages to the injured party. Under no fault, there's division of property and some kind of allocation of child custody, but there really isn't any acknowledgement that one party may have done something to damage the relationship, that one person may have done something that that caused the relationship to break down, in fact, that they didn't keep their part of the bargain. In most states, the courts don't even want to hear about that. They don't even want to discuss marital fault. They don't want you coming in there and saying, oh, he did this and he did that, and therefore I'm entitled to more or whatever. Now, in point of fact, it turns out that there's still lots of acrimony, there's still lots of disputing, there's still lots of fighting. It just goes on at the custody stage and at the property settlement stage. But they're not allowed to say, he was cheating on me. That's not supposed to be relevant. Or she walked out on me. Those things aren't supposed to be relevant to the settlement. But all the animosity, all the disputing, it's all still there. It's just been transferred to a different arena than it used to take place in the 1950s.
Okay, so before no-fault divorce became the coin of the realm, marriage was viewed, at least legally, more as a contract that you couldn't simply dissolve it or say, okay, shake hands and walk away. It was something that the state thought it had an interest in maintaining, and those who wanted to divorce had to, in some form or another, demonstrate that the contract had been broken substantially.
Yes, and you see, one of the arguments in favor of getting rid of the fault base is that there were couples who both parties wanted a divorce, and they would have to go through the charade of accusing the husband of infidelity in order to get the divorce. But they both agreed, they both collaborated, they had the outcome worked out between the two of them before they ever started the whole thing. And so people said, well, gosh, this is kind of stupid. Why are we making them go through all this? Why not just have, you know, a nice, simple, easy procedure so that people like that can get divorced at lower cost without all the charade? And you'd think to yourself, well, yeah, that makes sense. Why make them go through all that? But what people didn't anticipate is that by changing the rules in the way that we changed the rules, you brought on a whole bunch more people getting divorced who would not have ever thought about getting divorced under the old rules. And so there had been a whole slew of unanticipated consequences because people just thought about that one case that was in front of their face right at the moment and didn't think about how they were changing the incentives and how that was going to play out, as more and more people started using the system and seeing what the system was like and seeing how it worked. They really didn't fully anticipate the way the marriage system, marriage is a permanent vow, how quickly that would all unravel.
Did the adoption of no-fault divorce, in some sense, redefine marriage itself?
Yes, that's a good way to put it. It did redefine marriage. In a sense, it made marriage as a permanent lifelong union. It basically wiped that out. You know, as a legal fact, that doesn't exist anymore. There are people who, as a matter of religious faith, believe that and hold that, but they don't have any particular standing in the law. You know, in other words, you go to the court and you say, well, you know, we got married in the Catholic Church, and according to the Catholic Church, he's still married. Enforce that version of the contract. They're going to throw you out. They're not going to listen to that. So the people who are staying married, who get married and stay married for a lifetime, they really are, in a way, countercultural radicals, you know, because they really are bucking the trend of what the legal system and the culture has created around them.
You mentioned before that many of the people who divorce, even under the no-fault system, it's not always someone instigates the divorce in some way against the will of the other spouse.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I guess that was the big unanticipated thing. People had the idea that they were dealing with these divorces where both parties agreed. And so they figured, well, that's what's going to happen. People are going to agree to get a divorce and it'll all be fine. But they didn't anticipate the fact that one party could just say, you know what, I'm out of here. And the other party really doesn't have any way to say, no, wait a second, let's slow this whole thing down. They don't have any legal way of doing that anymore. And so that has been the huge change. And so by some estimates, you know, probably two-thirds to three-quarters of divorces are against the will of one party or the other. It's really quite astonishing. It's hard to get good statistics because there are certain things we don't ask routinely. you know, so you don't have like census data that tells that, you know, where everybody who's ever been divorced has answered the same batch of questions. But some data sets do allow you to either infer or to know directly, you know, whose idea was this anyhow, you know, and you can tell from those surveys, that there's, in a vast majority of cases, one party does not want the divorce, and is going at it, and it's happening against their will.
When we come back from this break, we'll continue our conversation for a few minutes with Jennifer Roback Morse. We'll talk about men, women, and children under no-fault divorce. Of course, women and children first. And we will spend some time wrapping up our conversation with her. Then we turn to the Crusades. If there were a period in Christian history, now it also includes Muslim history, a period in Christian history that is misunderstood or intentionally misunderstood, it would probably be the Crusades. What exactly were they? Were they holy wars? Was it mutual? Was this imperialism? Was it merely a problem with the Pope? We'll be answering those questions with Dr. Thomas Madden, professor of history at St. Louis University, here on Issues Etc. in a few minutes after this break. You can call us with questions or comments on no-fault divorce. Our guest, Jennifer Roback Morse, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or use our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of Issues Etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand Audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A new discovery in stem cell research may ease ethical concerns.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Scientists in both America and Japan are celebrating a new breakthrough. They have succeeded in taking human skin cells and turning them into what appears to be embryonic stem cells. Researchers were able to reprogram the chromosomes of the skin cells, making them into blank slates, or what's called human universal cells. Previously, the only known way to acquire such cells was to create and then destroy a human embryo, a practice fraught with moral and ethical problems. Tune in next time to hear what people are saying about this new discovery.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E becomes final today. Me and Liz.
Talk about no-fault divorce with Jennifer Roback Morse. Hey, that rhymes. Those things happen. For the next 10 minutes of Issues Etc., I'm Todd Wilkin. You can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, talkback at issuesetc.org. It's Thursday, July the 31st, in about 5 or 6 minutes, Dr. Thomas Madden on the Crusades. Paul is listening in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Paul, thanks for waiting on the line.
Hey, great to have you guys back, and great topic, Todd. Thanks for covering this.
Thank you.
A couple comments and then a question for Ms. Morris. I did think it's interesting that the historical note that it was actually Governor Ronald Reagan who signed the big no-fault divorce bill into law when he was governor in California in 1969. Since he became kind of a big conservative hero later, he really kind of pulled the cork on this. Another comment I wanted to make was a book that I found helpful on this topic called Generation X, Adult Children of Divorce and the Healing of Our Pain by Jen Abbas. I've recommended that to friends who have found it pretty good. And then my question for your guest is, I wonder if in her research on this topic, she's found that if the churches went through a theological change on divorce first, especially on the issue of what's called today malicious desertion, sort of the idea that if the husband has abandoned the wife or the wife has abandoned the husband, that justifies the divorce, because that has been interpreted now to even allow for a sort of emotional abandonment as justification. I'll listen to the answer offline. Thanks.
All right, Paul, thank you very much. What about his question there, Jennifer?
Well, two points about it. First of all, abandonment or desertion in many states always counted as grounds for divorce. So, marriage is supposed to be a sharing of a common life in most theological traditions. And so if the guy just disappears or the woman just disappears, after a certain period of time, many states had a provision to say, well, for all practical purposes, you're divorced by default, kind of a thing. So that often was part of the situation, but expanding it to, kind of emotional desertion like this, that's really something quite different, I think. I mean, they're using the same words, but the words mean something so different that I think you can safely say it's something different. Now, as far as the church's position, that's a little bit harder for me to answer, because I'm part of the Roman Catholic tradition, which at least on paper has always held a rather strict line on the subject, as most people know. We take seriously the statement that you're not supposed to get divorced and remarriage. The prohibition, in fact, is not on divorce itself. The prohibition is on remarriage after divorce. And the Catholic Church, officially still holds that position and never changed that position, although their practice in the 70s and 80s of giving annulments rather easily amounted to a kind of change in policy. But at least on paper, they never changed their doctrine. Now, I can't speak for the whole of the Reformed or Protestant theological tradition, because obviously a lot of those groups did different things with it. But I think it's safe to say that our Protestant brethren, many of them have gotten quite lax on the subject, both theologically and practically, to the extent that churches, in effect, compete with one another to see who can have the easiest standards. That is that if your church decides that, by golly, we're going to enforce Matthew 19 and we're not going to allow you to remarry because you've been divorced, you can just go down the street to another church where the pastor is more obliging. And that has created some bad feeling between Catholics and other groups, because sometimes people will laughingly say to us, gosh, don't change your policy, okay, because half their congregation is lapsed Catholics who have divorce problems. So that competitive process that has been set into motion by some of the churches relaxing their doctrinal and practical views on the subject, that has been a problem. And I think that more recently, in the 90s and certainly since the turn of the millennium, many churches are starting to retrace their steps on that and take the whole question of marriage and divorce much more seriously than they had been, requiring premarital counseling, holding the line a little bit more on, whether what counts as a valid marriage and what counts as a valid divorce, and so on and so forth. And churches are all over the map on that, but many places people are recognizing that the churches have to cooperate amongst themselves so that they don't get into this kind of competitive race for the bottom that had been going on in the 90s.
With only 30 seconds, has no-fault divorce proven to be good for men, women, and children?
It's been a disaster for children. It's been difficult for women. It's been difficult for some women. For the women who initiate divorces, it's not necessarily so bad for them. But surprisingly, there are many men who have suffered a lot from divorce because their spouses walk out on them, and in many places the courts favor the wife's right to custody and so on. So there are a lot of dads who end up being cut out of their children's lives by the family court in ways that they would not have chosen voluntarily, that's for sure. So it's been a mixed bag for the adults as far as the genders are concerned, but it's been a disaster for children. And you can also say that married couples overall have better lives than those who are divorced. So whether you're talking about men or women, marriage still conveys tremendous benefits to people in comparison with divorce.
Jennifer Roback Morse is founder and president of the Ruth Institute based in San Diego. She spent 15 years teaching economics at Yale University and George Mason University. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find a direct link to her website on ours, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, and you'll find information on Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.